Hi, my name is Ben Armstrong.
Hi, this is David Koch.
My name is Thomas Maurer.
Hi, I'm Donna Sarkar.
Hi, my name is Lana Montgomery.
Hi, I'm Seth Warres.
Hi, I'm Aaron Thomas.
I'm Jess Dodson.
Hi, I'm Rocky Heckman.
Hi, I'm Sonia Cuff.
Hi, I'm Troy Hunt.
Hello, this is Wally Mead.
My name is Reid Purvis.
Hi, I'm Lars Finn.
Hi, my name is Alan Birchall.
Hi, I'm Adam Fowler.
Hi, I'm Scott Guthrie, and you're listening to the Need to Know podcast.
All the latest Microsoft Cloud news, as well as industry guest deep dive conversations. It's the Need to Know podcast, all thanks to Rode Microphones. The Need to Know podcast. Catch us on Twitter and Facebook, NGK Podcast, and online at podcasts.needtoknow.cloud.
So we're back for yet another episode of the Need to Know podcast. They just keep rolling on. We're on to episode 180 now, and I'm again joined by my co-host, Brenton Johnson. Welcome.
Good to be back, Robert.
Another episode 180. We're fast approaching our 200th episode, which is will be a milestone. I'm sure that we'll have fairy bread, party pies, and sausage rolls on that day.
Yeah, well, I think at this rate, we should get there before the end of the year, shouldn't we?
I would think so. We're certainly cranking them out. We're, again, doing one fairly close to the last one from Marco's show, which, again, was a bit of a long one, but has been well received. We've got a little bit of feedback around that. Appreciate listeners out there who have provided us some feedback on that. This episode, we've been very lucky to call on Stephen Rose, who is the product marketing manager for OneDrive at Microsoft. It's going to be a great interview, so encourage you to listen to that and again provide us any feedback. But before we start doing that, we probably need to roll into some news, and I think probably some maybe not some necessary cloud news, but some big news that's coming. Certainly a big download that's coming is the 1803 update of Windows 10. So are all your clients prepared for a massive download tonight, Brenton?
Oh, of course. Well, actually, all my clients are patch managed, and we can patch manage Windows 10 now, which has been a problem that we haven't been able to solve for the whole time that Windows 10 has been out, until up to about 2 months ago. So we can actually patch manage Windows 10. Of course, you can do it in Intune. If you've got Intune deployed in an organization, you can manage all your updates through Windows Updates for Business. But yeah, this RMM software now does it. I use Continuum. So I'll be able to have a little bit more control over that. Because first thing Monday morning is not a good time to do an update. Over a weekend is not always the best time to do an update, because if it doesn't turn back on Monday, you have some upset people. So it's a matter of having a conversation with your customers and managing that process with those ones where it impacts them most.
Well, at the end of the day, yes, I think that one of the benefits of Windows 10 is the fact that it's updating regularly. We're going to get some new features, security updates. Not quite sure exactly how big the update is. It'll probably be fairly big. I usually roll it out directly. I don't look after machines or on-prem stuff any day, so I certainly roll it out to my machines as soon as possible so that we can get a look at it and a feel of it. Understand that people want to control the rollouts, but again, just be prepared for that. My understanding is it will start rolling out tomorrow, I think, or maybe Wednesday our time. So I think it comes out again on the 30th of April in the US, which will probably mean that it's maybe tomorrow, maybe Wednesday for us over here in the future out here in Australia. Now, one of the other things that I saw, which I think was very, very interesting, was some revenue results from Microsoft. And in short, Microsoft's killing it. There is no question that products like Azure and Office 365 are doing remarkably well. In many, many situations, it's now placing them well above people like Amazon. And for example, we're seeing that things like Azure, their revenue is climbing at 93% a quarter. Dynamics 365 is also climbing, rising at about 65%. And again, we're seeing that, like I said, Microsoft's gap between Microsoft's revenue and Amazon, again, is beginning to increase. So the figures that I'm reading here basically say that Microsoft's looking at a fourth quarter result in 2017 of 5.3 billion versus Amazon's 5.1 billion. So that's a lot of billions, but at the end of the day, it indicates Microsoft's growth in the enterprise area, and I think also especially now that they're well poised in the AI space and the IoT. that's going to accelerate even further away. So again, I would suggest that if you still don't believe this cloud thing is here to stay, then these latest figures are certainly on the way to proving you wrong, I would suggest. Wouldn't you...
Why do you think we've seen such an uptick in Azure compared to AWS, Robert?
Well, I think, again, the one of the big benefits of Azure is, if you step back, it's a complete ecosystem. So it's got the identity with Azure AD. I think also, too, that Azure is more focused on PaaS, so platform as a service, rather than IaaS. I think AWS is particularly IaaS focused. So the PaaS stuff, again, speaks to the next wave. It also speaks more to developers. And with Microsoft's ecosystem of things like Visual Studio integrating direct into Azure, Office 365 for users. So I think, again, the real power of the Microsoft solution is the ecosystem. One provider can do your directory services. One provider can do your virtual machines. One provider can do your storage, can do your AI, can do your machine learning. Again, I think that's one of the secrets. I think also the other secret, which a lot of people probably don't appreciate, is the turnaround Microsoft's had when it comes to open source and Linux. So many years ago, maybe not so long ago, Microsoft was very, very anti-open source and anti-Linux. But now, again, they certainly embrace that, and they have gone into that community with open arms. And I think that's really brought a lot of people back into the Microsoft fold to see that they will support the open source movement and make it easier to move those sort of applications into their Azure platform.
Yeah, and I'd agree with that. I think Microsoft already having all the enterprise customers already. Almost every company in the world buys Microsoft in some form or another. I think that's where we're seeing a lot of that uptick. Amazon's been seen particularly high growth because they've been the infrastructure behind companies like Dropbox or basically any cloud application on the internet that's just gone bananas has all been built in Amazon. But now we see things like Dropbox has moved out of Amazon. It's interesting, Xero moved into Amazon from Rackspace. They don't want to run their own infrastructure, and they like the AI stuff that that Amazon brings. So it's sort of, I think that's what we're finding, is those mega corporations that already have Microsoft, it clicks in, it makes sense for those guys. Sometimes AWS makes sense that they do that, but a lot of the times, you know, everyone's so familiar with Microsoft, it's pretty hard for a big company like an enterprise to switch seats. So I think that's what we've seen. All that new cloud adoption in Azure is because enterprise is finally catching up with small business, to put it one way.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't agree with that. I think that, again, the biggest benefits to the cloud have been at the end, so very small and very large businesses. I think a lot of enterprises have adopted Azure, especially to help reduce costs, especially with Office 365 as well. I think where you find the hesitancy is in the middle tier, the medium space. People have run single server, SBS style, again, very hesitant to move to the cloud. Now, obviously, Microsoft makes the majority of its money in the enterprise space, like you said. And I think, again, a lot of their tools now, things like Azure File Sync and so on, are providing the abilities that weren't there before. And I think also, too, that we've reached that tipping point generally where the compliance around Azure also is another big winner. It's security. Again, so it's one of the, I think it's the only provider in Australia currently that can provide to the Department of Defence and the Australian government in a lot of the restricted data areas. So again, those sort of compliance that Microsoft invested in are certainly paying off handsomely in that respect. So I think there's a lot of reasons, and I think that they will continue to accelerate. I think Microsoft certainly will certainly be in the winner of the space, but we'll just have to wait and see.
Yeah, all right, we'll keep moving. There's a news story here about the increase in SharePoint Online storage allocation. They're marketing it as a 20x increase. I see it more as a 10x increase. What's your take on this, Robert?
Well, if you multiply if you work it out that it's currently 0.5 and it goes to 10 gig, that is a 20x increase.
Okay, I thought it was anyway. Yeah, no, so I'll basically take your word on that, actually.
Okay, we have to send Brenton back to school to do his maths here. So basically what it is SharePoint for a long time had a base tenant size of 1 terabyte. So every SharePoint had 1 terabyte of shared storage. Now, previously you received a half a gig per licensed user on top of that. So you started with 1 terabyte, then you got half a gig per licensed user. So Microsoft has now changed that, or is changing that, from July 1 to 10 gigs per licensed user. So we're moving from 0.5 gigs to 10 gigs per user. So for example, if you have 100 user license, that's going to give you the 1 terabyte plus 100 times 10 gig to give you 2 terabytes of total storage. So the obviously need for this is the growth in the data that is going into products like SharePoint. And half a gig is just really not enough when you look at the base 1 terabyte. And you also look at the fact that you're getting effectively around 5 terabytes minimum for OneDrive for Business. So more and more data moving to the cloud. Now, interesting thing here is just think about, because apparently, again, from July 1, this will be turned on for all existing tenants. There's nothing you'll have to do. You'll automatically get that space in your tenant. Just imagine what that's going to be like. All of a sudden, you know, you've got to move from this amount of storage to a huge amount more storage for all tenants. So from a logistical point of view, you've really got to give kudos to Microsoft for, again, you know, enabling that across so many tenants and for so many different users. So it's impressive stuff, and really looking forward to that increase in space.
Well, yeah, you know the product as well as anybody, Robert. And, you know, SharePoint isn't sort of your backyard SaaS product that you go get off the shelf and, you know, it's someone coded it up in a weekend in a garage. You know, this thing's a pretty robust enterprise-ready document management solution. So for them to give you this much, a basic, I don't say it's not free, but it feels like free because you already
well,
need it
for, I think that for everything well, if you're else. Already paying for it, you're going to get an extra huge whack of, you know, a huge whack of storage, which again, like you said, is logistically wise. I mean, it's just amazing. I mean, just you don't just go in and plug a few disks in and suddenly it increases. It's going to be. We'll all see it as seamless, but at a back end, it's very impressive what they're able to do now.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the 10-seat enterprise that a lot of our listeners will be working with, a 10-seat business, now having a terabyte base allocation in SharePoint is phenomenal. We run into, it does come with its own risks. We come out, you'll probably laugh at this one, Robert, but come across a customer today, and I don't particularly get into SharePoint, do PowerShell and that sort of thing. So I gauged my SharePoint consultant. I said, Al, can you come in and run this PowerShell script and fix this problem for me? So I wanted to check all the documents out so they could move the library or something. And we jumped into the library, and they had 65,000 items in the library. And Al said, you should never have more than 5,000 ever. And 2,000 to 3,000 is about where I'd like it to be. And it was at 65,000. And they said, oh, we need to move the thing. I said, oh, look, you know, this is a big problem. You know, you should have hired a SharePoint consultant. So I promptly terminated my engagement with them. They're no longer a customer of mine because they didn't take my advice. And now they have this problem. I don't know how to fix it. And I said, look, what you need is a SharePoint team to come in and sort that problem out. But I said, I suppose that's a conversation you guys need to have with your customers around what is the value of having a partner. If you have a partner in SharePoint or someone who knows a bit about it, they're going to keep you ahead of those problems so you don't make mistakes like that. I don't know how hard it is to dig themselves out of that. Maybe Robert can add some insight around that, but I was not very excited about having to deal with
it. So at the end of the day, the reason there was a perceived 5,000 limit was that SharePoint, when it lists items in a library, basically builds it dynamically. When it gets to 5,000, it's basically running into memory limits to display it in the browser, so you did get slowdown. Microsoft has implemented an auto fix to that in the back end, so all libraries now that are over 5,000 or whatever automatically have indexes applied to them. So again, no matter how large the library is, there should no longer be any sort of problem working with that, because again, Microsoft will auto-index those items for you, and you won't see that supposed limit around 5,000 items. So the limit of a document library currently is about 30 million items.
Okay.
So again, that's a lot of items, and they can all be done quite quickly now. if it hadn't rolled out to that library for that customer, then basically the solution is to go in and pick one of the fields and index that, so implement an index on that, and that would overcome that sort of issue. So another example of the stuff Microsoft's doing at the back end, as more and more stuff gets put into SharePoint and you get items that exceed, you know, best practices, Microsoft's then taking steps like auto-indexing columns to overcome those sort of issues. So again, there unfortunately is a lot of perception about this 5,000 limit. It certainly was an issue on-prem because there were memory restrictions, but now with the online version and the fact that Microsoft's auto-indexing a lot of this sort of stuff in the back end for you, you should not see that sort of limit or that sort of issue going forward. But again, there's always best practice to be applied, but effectively, like I said, there is now the ability to have over 30 million items in a library or a list in SharePoint and not see any performance degradation. So
that makes a lot of sense, Robert. We're sitting there going, why can't we run PowerShell through it? It kept saying, you've got to have administrative rights to up the limit from 5,000, and we weren't really sure why it let it do it, but now we know why it lets it do it.
Yeah. So anyway, again, you're still right in the fact that it's always best to engage someone who knows the tool to give you the best advice on it. There is a best practice to follow. Again, structuring it in a correct way and breaking things up rather than dumping everything into one library and running. That's generally where you get a very bad experience. So if you're moving data from one on-prem location of files and folders straight into one document library, then there's no real value added. It's an opportunity to structure it correctly and, again, take advantage of tools like Yammer, Teams, and whatnot, as well as what you get in SharePoint. So, again, speak to your trusted professional to make sure that you get the best advice on that. And, again, make sure that you're using the full range of tools that Microsoft makes available in Office 365. Speaking of which, again, one of the things that we're seeing is that there is some information that Microsoft's put out here around some updates that it's going to release to Microsoft 365. So what it's doing, it's talking about a modern desktop here. So we spoke about in the last episode how Microsoft's moving to the Windows-based apps rather than the desktop apps in things like OneNote. So again, it's rolling those sort of things out. It's also giving you the ability to have free access to the delivery optimization status and via Windows Analytics. So, excuse me, that allows you to go into a console in Azure and allows you to look at the optimized updates capability of your environment. So you can look at what machines are ready for Windows 10 or the latest version of Windows 10, what are blockers, what is potentially going to cause you some issues. So again, that is the readiness toolkit that will be available to you as well. They've also included some additional solutions for first line workers and kiosks. So again, we're now getting what Microsoft is calling a kiosk browser. All right, so that's to make life easier for our first-line workers who are typically going to be working directly in websites accessing information. And again, we've seen some updates to Windows Autopilot. So Windows Autopilot is the way to deploy Windows 10 to OEM-style machines. We're now seeing that it's Microsoft's going to, from the Windows 10 April update, so the upcoming Windows update, so it now says that Windows Autopilot includes the enrollment status page. The page is going to enable you to ensure policy settings and apps can be provisioned on the device during the out-of-box experience before the user gets to the desktop and begins interacting with them. So we're beginning to see that the autopilot is being extended to being more than just a simplified version to install Office. We're now going to get the ability potentially to add additional apps and roll those in as part of the automated process as well. We're also seeing a tighter integration of the Microsoft 365 add-on features, the security options, particularly around devices, being rolled into the admin area. And of course, we all need to start preparing for our GDPR date, which will be happening very shortly, to make sure all our systems are compliant. So again, lots of new stuff Microsoft's adding around Microsoft 365. We look to see those roll out, and again, an indication that the product is continuing to improve. So have you done any Microsoft 365 yet, Brenton?
No, not yet. Been thinking about it, but it's a fair bit to get my head around, and trying to integrate it with my existing service offering is challenging. In MSP land, we already have a lot of the features integrated into RMM softwares and whatever. So to bring in and go Microsoft stack, particularly when you've got to manage everything with PowerShell, is not great. I think once I start talking to 100-seat, 200-seat customers, or very, very security-conscious customers, it starts to become a much easier conversation to have, because you've got resources to deploy, you've got resources to manage it on a one-to-one basis. Having done all the training and having listened to the podcast last week as well, it was quite a good one with Mark and the insights that both of you bring. It's something that we all have to be thinking about, but for the very small customer, the 10-seat accounting firm, it's a very difficult value proposition when you say, okay, well, now I need to manage 10 or 20 or 30 of these tenants all at once. And there's no real, one GUI portal to do it all in. So that's the challenges I'm having, getting my head around it. I think there's a good value proposition. The other thing is a lot of accounting firms, for example, don't run around with mobile devices very often. So trying to sell them on the value of protecting their information where it is. They still live in the old world of the information lives in the office, the work is done in the office. And best thing you're going to do is maybe email on their phone, and that's all they're really interested in doing. So they don't want a flexible work policy. They don't want that. They want people to work at the office. So, yeah, I think world's moving. Some people are there and some people aren't. What's your take on that, Robert?
So my take is that I have a challenge for you that you need to complete before the next time that we meet on the podcast.
Yep.
That challenge is, and that is a challenge for every IT reseller, IT pro out there, is you need to learn PowerShell. You don't need to become an expert. You need to learn PowerShell, right? It is not difficult. It is the way that management needs to be done going forward, right? It makes life so much easier. You can script things, you can log into different tenants, and it gives you that flexibility, right? So again, and you do realize that you only need two things to be a PowerShell expert, Brenton. Do you know what those two things are?
Windows PC and Robert Crane's podcast.
No. You need to know two keyboard commands, Control-C and Control-V. All you need to do is find a script, copy it, paste it, and use it, right? But it is such an important skill for any IT pro. It really is, and it's not difficult. So, again, if you haven't already invested in learning PowerShell, please go out and do that. Send me some feedback. I can send you some links that will get you started. But even at a basic level, I am very, very amazed at how many IT pros generally haven't even looked at PowerShell. So that would be my challenging takeaway for this episode.
So is your course still relevant?
Yep. So PowerShell is pretty much still relevant. And again, we need PowerShell also to manage Azure. I did write a book a number of years ago on PowerShell and Office 365. That is still valid. There are newer ways or shorter cut ways to get to it, but basically the fundamentals are the same.
Yep.
And one of these days when I'm not doing a podcast and doing other things around the place, I'll look to update that book. But again, plenty of links that I can send you to, plus I've got some online courses that are available to you if you want to dive into it. But you certainly need to have that as a skill. Another thing that Microsoft is making available to people is the Office 2019 preview. So the new version of Office, again, preview is available. We'll put the link in the show notes for those of you who want to go and download it and have a play with it. This is basically the desktop version, so we'll get the updates pushed to us over time via Office 365. But if you want to go and see what Microsoft is, I suppose, calling Office 2019, you can certainly go and download that preview and have a play with it. Another thing that Microsoft has made available to us is Microsoft Forms. Woohoo! The ability to do questions and answers and quizzes and all that sort of stuff is now gone GA, so it's now out of preview, which means that Microsoft is now calling that enterprise ready. So if you haven't used Microsoft Forms, really good way for you to collect information to make it easy to capture that. You can then use something like Flow to insert that information into things like SharePoint. So again, look at all the tools that are available to you in the Office 365 space. And again, Forms is a really handy, might seem simplistic. One of the real benefits of Forms is the ability to send a link to someone outside Office 365 and have them complete that. So they don't need a login to complete the information for you. So the last thing I'll talk about here before we get into our interview with Stephen is that OneDrive has also got some new sharing and collaboration features for the Mac, iOS, and Android. So we're seeing the feature set of those platforms catching up to Windows. Windows, I think, will always be the premier experience, as they say, but fast on its heels are the Mac, iOS, and Android, and we'll put a link to that in the show notes. Now, one of the other tools that I came across recently is a bit of a funny one. I don't know if you had a chance to look at it, Brenton, is Microsoft Kazala. Did you have a chance to have a look at that?
Yeah, I did have a bit of a peek at that, to be honest. Looks like it's targeting developing markets with large populations. They're talking the Philippines with 100 million people in it. They're talking
India,
you know, with their billion people. What was the other country?
Kenya. Kenya was another one. But it's interesting that you can tie it and use it in your Office 365 using an Office 365 login. So it's a bit like WhatsApp, a Microsoft version of WhatsApp that's sort of tied to businessy things. So again, it's very interesting that there's a free version and a paid version. Very interesting. And again, Microsoft bills it as, you know, you can share documents, you can have actions, polls, surveys. Again, have a look at it. I'm not sure, again, where Microsoft's sort of where Microsoft's sort of going with this, but an indication that perhaps they bought someone and they slapped the Microsoft moniker on it. Don't know. It's a bit of one of those weird applications that, again, will integrate with Teams, or maybe some of the features we'll find in Teams and stuff going forward. Don't know. But sort of there's something if you want to have if you've got a bit of time up your sleeve and you want to have a look at this sort of thing and maybe try and work out where it would fit inside a business. I think it does have potential, but we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, I think it's about Microsoft trying to get an anchor into the third world, or we can't call it that anymore, developing countries. We all know all the new money is going to be coming from China, India, these big population bases will become superpowers eventually. You know, Google's been kicked out of, or chose to withdraw from China and is missing out on that race. Microsoft is more compliant with Chinese way of doing things. So no one wants to miss out on those opportunities. So I think it's a pretty smart move to get in there, get them familiar with the Microsoft way, get them using Microsoft, trusting Microsoft, and using technology better. I did notice it's smartphone at first, which is, you know, congruent with what you find in developing countries where there's more smartphones than there will ever be computers. Everyone does everything on a smartphone. They pay their bills with a smartphone, particularly in Kenya, where mobile payments are basically ubiquitous. It's, you know, that's how you do banking, is mobile payments. So I think it's a very smart move by Microsoft, more of a strategic play. And, you know, when you're talking about software, it scales cheaply. So you can do a free product to billions of people and it won't send you broke anymore.
Well, it's interesting. It's sort of, again, it's interesting. Microsoft's got a to-do app, you know, Microsoft To-Do, which sort of has become a bit stale, I would say. It moves forward very slowly, but it would be nice if it went, you know, a bit further. They also bought Wunderlist and haven't seen a lot of change with that. So they've got a couple of these sort of communications to do, group sharing, mobile things floating around that probably need to be pulled together into, you know, one dedicated app. It may be possible that some of these features are out there being tested, perhaps in larger markets, with the idea that they'll be pulled into Teams as well. So yeah, we'll just have to wait and see. But again, go out and have a look at that app, see what you think. Let us know your feedback. Before we get into our interview with Stephen, obviously, is there anything else from you, Brenton, that you want to share with our listeners?
No, I think we've gone banged on long enough. We're at 28 minutes already.
Gee, so you consider that you're banging on, eh? Oh, dear me. Already, it's become a chore for you, has it?
Oh, I don't know about that. I'm having a ball.
Good to hear. All right, so how can people get in contact with you if they want to ask you any questions or follow up on anything you've spoken about in the podcast?
Yep, so jump onto Microsoft Edge, go to Google, type in Bing, go to Bing, and then type in Brenton Johnson, and you'll find me being the first result, BrentonJohnson.com.
And you know that if you Google Google on Google Chrome, then you break the internet. So that's probably a very wise move that he's suggesting there. So you can find me on the Twitters direct at DirectorCIA. You can also send us an old world email, feedback@needtoknow.cloud. Follow my blog, blog.ciaops.com. And obviously there's also a N2K podcast on the Twitter and also in Facebook, so that's another great place for you to go and provide feedback, suggestions, who you'd like to see on the podcast, and again, what other topics we'd like to cover. But I think with that, that's all from us, and let's throw over to our interview with Stephen Rose. I'm joined by a special guest for this episode, Senior Product Marketing Manager for OneDrive for Business, Stephen Rose. Welcome, Stephen.
Thanks for having me.
Excellent. All right. Well, as we always do here, I'd like you, if you can, just to give people a bit of a background about yourself and how you've got to the position that you're in at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. I've been with Microsoft almost 10 years now. I was a Microsoft Gold Partner for about 10, 15 years before coming to Microsoft. I spent 5 or 6 years in the Windows Worldwide team, launching Windows 7 and Windows 8 and owning the IT Pro content there. I then spent 3 years in our U.S. subsidiary on the Windows and Surface team, launching Surface devices and Windows 10. And I've now been with the OneDrive team now for about a year and a half. It's been an amazing year. We launched a brand new Sync client at Ignite. We announced that we've launched 122 new features for OneDrive and some great new stuff like Files Restore, Files on Demand. So it's been a really exciting journey, and OneDrive has just been a phenomenal product for me to be able to work on, so I'm super lucky.
Excellent. Well, again, I thank you for coming on. I also thank you from a user's point of view for all those features and functionality that you have built into OneDrive. I know it has taken a bit of a battering over the years, but in recent history, some of those additions like Files on Demand and the ability to restore and roll back have been phenomenal. And again, really, I think, put OneDrive back in the spotlight as a modern solution for cloud storage. But
awesome. Thank you.
With that in mind, let's just go back a step here. What would you say is the problem that OneDrive for Business solves? What does the product actually solve for the end user?
It's really four key things. That number one, OneDrive is going to allow you to work from any device on any platform. We have spent a lot of time over the past year bringing a lot of features and functionality to Android, iOS, and Mac. We have a blog post that I'm going to be putting up tomorrow that will talk about some of the new collaboration features we brought to Mac, and that we've even brought the same sharing dialogue that you get in OneDrive and that you get in Office and that you get in SharePoint. We're bringing that to mobile for Android and iOS, and we're actually in the process of rolling that out. So that ability to be able to move between your devices and pick up right where you left off is critical. Number two is that work with anyone both inside and outside of your organization. This year, we brought not only anonymous sharing where you could time out a date, but secure a sharing that allows you to use a secure one-time use passcode so that you can ensure the person you're sharing with is at the proper address. They can't forward it or share it with other people. Protecting, your work with enterprise-grade security and compliance, features like Files Restore that we brought, leveraging the Azure information protection and the fact that all OneDrive files are encrypted at rest and in motion is really important. And then search, being able to find what you're looking for easily on a Windows machine right there from the search bar from Cortana, on a Mac, being able to do it within Siri. Even the drag and drop capabilities within iOS to be able to find what you're looking for quickly. So it's really those four areas are where we really focus together, and that OneDrive lets you share and work together on all your files.
Okay, so one of the things that is quite common, I think, out there in the field is that OneDrive makes a great solution for storing typically files and folders, same with SharePoint, but what's very common is that a lot of people over the years have been used to and familiar and comfortable with an F drive, an S drive, a map drive,
to their files and folders, their expectation or their desire in some cases for that not to change. And so they're looking to try and achieve the same sort of result with OneDrive. I mean, personally, I would like to encourage people to use the new interface, but I would assume from the Microsoft point of view, that will be something very common that you see people wanting basically to lift and shift and then map a drive as they always have. I mean, what's your sort of thinking and guidance for people out there on doing that sort of arrangement?
I think that that's an extremely fair question, and we hear it from a ton of customers. How do we allow them to work the way they were working and continue to move forward with that? And what we're seeing is a lot of customers are doing this is they're you know, Windows 7 is coming to its end in the next 18 to 24 months. So customers now are starting to move to Windows 10. They want to make OneDrive part of it, and they really sort of want to rethink how people are working, because people aren't just sitting at a desk with a laptop. They're working off an iPad. They're working off an Android tablet, et cetera, and they want to be able to have that flexibility. So what we're seeing is, as they're doing that, they're also looking at Office 365 to really enable people to work wherever they want and on the device that they want to work from. It's not, here's this 12-pound corporate laptop with 30 minutes of battery life. It's, hey, what works best for you? So what we're really seeing is sort of two camps. Number one, they're really looking at what is my content versus our content. And for an end user, your content is content that you create, that you need to store, that you need to access, that you work on a regular basis, versus content that may be on a shared drive, which you're working on with other people inside the company or outside the company. So we're seeing kind of two things. Number one, the content that is our content, things that you're collaborating on, moving that to SharePoint. And we have a feature in SharePoint that allows you to do something called a team site sync, where once you put the content into SharePoint, you can hit a sync button and it shows up just like a folder in your Windows Explorer. Because Windows Explorer is, for people on a PC, that's how we want them to access OneDrive and access their files, is through that. So by moving that to SharePoint, doing the team site sync, it brings it local. What becomes really great is if they're using Windows 10 with files on demand, that content is there, it's searchable, and they can access it, yet it's not taking up any room on their device outside of files that they've chosen to have there locally. For their personal files, those are stored also inside of OneDrive, and we see customers that are using known folder migration, and we're about to release some functionality called known folder migration, which will allow you to basically say, take my desktop, my documents, and basically move those all to OneDrive. So for an end user, when they've saved something in their My Documents or to their desktop, it's automatically saved in OneDrive. If you move to a new PC, everything is there. If you go to a tablet, everything is there. Now, what's great about moving everything to that share drive and doing it that way, A, you can search everything the same way that you did. B, you're going to be able to see that across all your devices. But what's great is if you change roles or if somebody leaves, you're not breaking that sharing. That's one of the things that we see when people say, we're just going to move everything into OneDrive rather than have a my files, our files. And you can do that. If you're a smaller business, then that may make great sense. But what's great is as people come and go, it doesn't affect the sharing relationships and who was working on this and all of a sudden somebody not having access. So that really brings some great depth and some really good flexibility for end users. That tends to be the talk track that we're seeing with a lot of our customers who have been using that share drive concept for ages, which does require you to go in through a VPN to get to your files and access. And that's just a lot of extra work instead of, there it is right on my device, ready to go, click, you're in.
Okay, what about the situation? I mean, something very common I think that a lot of people see is that we move the files to OneDrive, we move the files to SharePoint, Teams, multiple locations inside Office 365, and then, again, due to maybe bandwidth constraints or user habit, they then, for example, say, well, I want to be able to synchronize everything that's up in the cloud back down to my desktop so it can be quickly accessed. I mean, what's sort of the guidance around, you know, moving everything up and then syncing everything back? I would think that it's probably not the best approach to take, but it's something that we do see very commonly out there in the field.
Mm-hmm. I think there's a few things. And again, that's where files on demand really becomes valuable, because you're going to see every file. You're going to see a thumbnail preview for every file. You can access it from the web, and you can search even the text within those files without having to have them on the device. The only files on the device are the ones that you've actually opened and have worked with. So that's really the first thing, and that's probably the best way to do it. What we're seeing are customers who are using our self-service fast track tool or getting together with a partner that are basically helping them to move those over a weekend so that those are in the cloud, and then them picking and choosing which folders, if they're not using files on demand, which folders and resources they want to have locally. Again, if you've got a share drive, you don't have everything locally. If you unplug your computer, you don't have it. If it's all in the cloud, then that's fine. Wherever your PC's at, you can always access your browser and work from that. And that's what we're seeing is millennial workers and younger workers, they really want to do everything in the cloud. They're very comfortable with my emails in the cloud, my files are in the cloud, and being able to work with it that way. So you have some different options. It really depends on your users. One of the smartest things we've seen is a customer who rolled this out to 40,000 employees. First of all, they said to their employees, you roll this out when you're ready. We're going to do this over the next 3 years, but you do it. And they created team leaders who were helping everybody to sort of figure out what's the best way to work. And what really surprised them was they went from 100% of users working on the desktop, never using the web-based tools, to about 60-40. 40% of the people pretty much exclusively doing everything through the browser and the cloud as they were moving between multiple devices, and reduction from 100 down to about 60% that are still doing everything from the Explorer. So I think it's interesting when you give your end users those choices on what makes the most sense, that very often they may surprise you and do things in a really interesting and unique way that works best for them.
I think the key to it is, in my experience, is, like I said, is user training. We're taking a paradigm shift here from traditional files and folders and pretty much what I would consider static or dead, or, files that really are just mandatory to an environment where you've got check in, check out, you've got version control, you've got all the options that you've talked about. And the users, again, need help to understand the differences, understand what they can and they can't do, because they won't know what they don't know. So I think, again, a very key component is that training, is that getting people on board and comfortable with the new environment, how it works, what options they've got available. And as you say, that working in the web can be smarter, quicker, and easier than doing it in the traditional manner that they may be used to.
Absolutely. No, I think that's great. And then what they'll often do is find somebody in the department who's a little more advanced and really kind of set them up, do training, and they become peers for other people within that team, where the teammates go to them, where they go, well, I used to do it this way. And they say, well, now we can do this. And what's great is by using SharePoint, it's more than just a repository for data. If I've been gone for a few days, I go to our SharePoint site, I see news. I see what my coworkers are working on. I see what's new and what's happening with that, where data really comes to life. I think once you bring that in, and once you really start to leverage the graph where it's telling you, this is what people have shared with you, this is what you've shared with others. Before I go into a meeting, I'll go to the web browser, I'll hover over a file, and I'll see that I've shared this file with 10 people, but only 5 of them have read it. Walking into my meeting, that's going to change my conversation I'm going to have with my end users, as opposed to I shared this file with 10 people and I can see that all 10 have looked at it. I'm now ready to hit the ground running. That's something you can't do with a share drive. That's something you can't do by sending a file to 10 people, is to know who's actually opened this, who's actually edited it and made changes, and how are we working together through collaboration. The fact that we could have 3 different people on 3 different devices that are all working together, typing at the same time, chatting with each other, going back and forth, this really creates some really, really interesting things as you're editing things together, working together, and building together. And that's one of the great things that OneDrive really does, is it really powers that collaboration, allowing people not just to share, but like I said, to really work together and at the same time across multiple platforms.
Okay, so again, once we get it in there, it's got all these fantastic options that we can take advantage of, but before we can do that, we need to get the information into OneDrive. We need to get it into SharePoint. Obviously, from the Microsoft point of view, you have a lot of experience and guidance and, I suppose, directions you can give people as to the best way to do this migration process. So From your point of view and what you see out there, what's sort of a best practice approach to moving data, both personal and shared data, into these new locations like OneDrive for Business and SharePoint?
Well, I think it depends on if your data is pretty static or if it's complex data. If you go, we have the stuff, it's, you know, we're a pharmaceutical company, we have our brochures that we share with our field, this is constantly updating and changing, then it's probably not going to be too difficult if you have high turnover. Our customers that get more complex, we of course have our self-service migration toolkit, which they can download for free, which helps them to move OneDrive and help to move their shared drives into SharePoint or OneDrive, and that's a free tool. We also have our Fast Track service, which is free for many of our customers that are migrating over 500 users. Microsoft, if you're coming from a shared drive or if you're coming from Box or G Drive, will actually migrate you for free. And what's great is they'll provide you with the tools, they walk through, they kind of help you to organize your data. I think the most important thing to do is to really sort of take a step back. You don't just want to take, I always say there's two types of people when they move. There's the people who take everything in house A and move it to house B, whether it makes sense or not. And then there's the people who take a look at everything in house A and really go through everything and go, what makes sense? What can we get rid of? What's old? What should go into Azure file storage? Because this is a file we have to keep for 10 to 12 years but are never going to use again versus keeping inside of OneDrive and SharePoint. And then it's, do we start to bring in metadata? Are there new compliancy laws that we want to meet? Are we storing things on NAS or in email and it doesn't make sense? I think the most important thing is before somebody gets into how do we do this, it really is what using that moment in time to take a look not only at the tools, but what makes the best sense on how to organize this data based on how users are using it and based on how individuals like to work and how can we make that work for them. And I think that becomes a really critical thing. What's great is we have auto labeling functionality. We now, as part of GDPR, when you open up a new document, it automatically says, classify this document. Is it highly confidential? Is it general? Is it standard? So that those tags are automatically applied so that we're automatically using the security functionality like DLP and things like that that are built into Office 365 to appropriately manage, store, lockbox, and hang on to these files the way that they need to be done rather than people having a 50 gig PST file because they've just stored everything in email, including every sent email, which they never get rid of. So I think it's really sort of taking a look at how do we want a clean house? What are our users trying to achieve and what's the best way to do that? Then when you're ready, whether you're going to use our tools, whether you're going to use a partner to help guide you, there's so many different ways to go. But I think if you don't know what you want to get out of that move and how to best help your users, I think then, you know, it doesn't matter how you move the data if you've not really sort of organized it and thought about how to make the data more intuitive and help people to sort of help themselves on what they're looking for.
Okay, so obviously there's a number of other services out there from third parties that perform similar functions that a lot of customers probably are using that you've mentioned. So to your mind, what are the standout features and functionality of OneDrive for Business that sets it apart from its competition? You know, what makes it a better product than what is currently out there on the market?
That's a great question. I think there's actually a few things. I think number one is the fact that if you want to still work from your desktop and you want to share and edit and do all this stuff from your desktop, that you can do that with Box, Dropbox, G Drive. You have to do everything through the browser. So if you want to open and co-author documents in Office Online, then you're great using all of our products. But the moment you want to do it from the desktop, that's where you start to see a drop off, and that becomes a really key thing. If you want to be able to access your recent files across all of your devices, if you want to be able to do something like modern attachments, this is a great feature which OneDrive and Exchange and Outlook bring together, where when you go to send a file to somebody, rather than sending that file, because what you don't want is 10 different people having 10 different copies of a document, is to go ahead and share what looks like the file, but it's really what we call a modern attachment. So somebody gets it, it looks like a Word document, but when they open it, what they're really doing is they're going to your share site, whether it's SharePoint or OneDrive, they're opening up that single version and everybody's working on it together. What's great is you're no longer restricted by document size. You could share a 100 gig file. Doesn't make a difference because you're not transferring it through Exchange. So that ability to have modern attachments is really, really key. Our files restore feature. The ability, and we have this in both business and consumer, where you can go in and you can restore any file if you've gotten malware or spyware or ransomware or a hard drive crash, or you've had file corruption, to not just recover that file from a trash bin, which you can do for up to 90 days, but you can actually say, I got malware at noon on Saturday. I want to restore all my files to where they were at 11 a.m. Saturday morning. And that will actually bring you right back to that point in time. All the work you did right up until that moment is then restored back to that document, and you can scroll back and forth and move forward or backwards in time to find those appropriate documents. And that gives you a great peace of mind in case you do get hit with something like that, to be able to do that. SharePoint Team Site Sync, that ability to take your SharePoint Team Sites, be able to simply click a button and have those sync over as part of OneDrive. That secure one-time passcode that I talked about, so you can make sure that the person that you're sharing with is really that person, where they're not forwarding a link or it's forwarding to another email address. You can actually be confirmed much the way your bank or other folks do by sending you a one-time use passcode to be able to do that. Self-service recovery tools or deployment support for both on-premise and hybrid. So if you're in an on-prem environment, a hybrid or cloud, OneDrive works in all of those scenarios, unlike many of our competitors that are cloud only. That's just a few of the many features that we've been really excited to bring to the product over the past year, as well as the intelligence of the graph, which really allows you to find the files that you're looking for, that you can type in any word on any file that's being stored in OneDrive in the cloud, doesn't have to be on your device, and it will bring up all those files across OneDrive and SharePoint that are holding that and allow a user to get to it quickly. So it, for many people, it really helps them to really work from anywhere. I can sit there on my iPhone, I can find a file, I can forward it to somebody, I can collaborate with them, and I can actually work before I get back to my laptop or before I get to my tablet. So being able to work back and forth like that really allows me to sort of pick and choose how I want to work and where I want to do it, and be able to respond far more quickly than I had to when I'm, oh, I got to get back to my laptop and I've got to email this to this person, and oh, it's too big for this, and what am I going to do? And I'll drop it into a share and then I'll invite them. I don't need to worry about those things. I can just work and move on. And that, I think, is really at the core for any user when it comes to any sort of technology.
Okay, so again, lots of great features, lots of great functionality. I think also too that one of the big benefits of the OneDrive for Business is the fact that it sits inside the Office 365 Azure AD environment, which means one user login across your devices, the security, all the compliance stuff that has been built in. So again, apart from comparing product with product, also in the ecosystem, I think it makes a huge difference that it does sit inside that for a lot
Absolutely.
Of users.
Yeah, and you already have it. That's the other thing too, is if you have an Office 365 subscription, you have OneDrive. You don't have to pay extra for it. And a lot of those features that you just named and the compliancy of Trust Center are things that other companies charge you extra for, compliance and things along that line. Those are built in. The DLP, the lockbox, all that stuff is available to all Office users, which is great. So I think you make a really good point there.
Okay, so again, what would you say is the biggest challenge that you're currently trying to solve with OneDrive for Business? You know, what's the burning issue that's out there that you see in the field that you're trying to solve for customers, but, you know, maybe you're not quite there yet? What do you see as the big challenge for OneDrive for Business?
We look at user voice at uservoice.onedrive.com, which is where any user can go in and they can either put in something they'd like to see in the product or upvote something else. Right now, we have a few features that we're going to be announcing at the SharePoint Summit, the SharePoint Conference, the North American one, next month, which have been a few things that folks have been waiting for. I don't want to ruin the surprise, but we have one or two of those big features that folks have been asking for that we're going to be announcing there. We're working very hard on bringing files on demand to Mac. That's something that we're working on, and to create the best VDI experience that we can for users. So right now, those are really our big focuses, because that's what we're hearing from enterprises. But we have so many customers that are now moving to OneDrive, where 2 years ago they looked at us and just said, no way, you're nowhere near where we need to be. So I think we've done a lot of the right things. I think for us it's balancing evolution and revolution. What are the features that our customers are asking us for that they want to have so that we're competitive versus features that they don't expect, like files restore and things along that line. And this week we just announced support for multi-geo, so you can actually pick the location where you want your data to sit. So if you're in Australia and you want your data to sit in a data center in Australia for those users, you can do that. So bringing in that multi-geo support as well as the hold your own key are two things that we heard from customers, which we've now brought out a preview and we fully deployed. So it's really trying to balance those. But we'll have some great announcements the week of May the 20th on some future stuff around SharePoint and OneDrive. And then we're going to continue to look at user voice as that being our North Star on what we need to do to keep our customers happy and content and really listen to where we're not meeting their bar.
Okay, so again, let's look a little bit further out there. What do you see the future of, call it collaboration and OneDrive for Business, but let's, you know, move from today's environment where people are beginning to work with Teams, they're beginning to work on the web, they're beginning to use their mobile devices. What's sort of the next iteration? What's the next wave you're seeing in this sort of environment, especially in the context of OneDrive for Business? Are users going to change the way that they use files? Is there going to be some other shift in the way they think about storing files and working with them? I mean, what do you see, again, a little bit further out for collaboration in general and OneDrive for Business?
Yeah, I think what's most interesting is how many companies are saying we're going to use Teams exclusively. What we're seeing is less email. We're already seeing that millennials don't like to use email. They're using Slack. They're using Teams. They want to have these not just real-time chats, but they want to be able to read through those and get caught up. We have one or two companies that have said below the surface, it's all SharePoint and OneDrive, but Teams is going to be how we do this, Teams and Yammer. And that's really at the front, and that's the interface that everybody's seeing, that every time they start a new project, it spins up a new Teams site. And OneNote and OneDrive and SharePoint, of course, is the file storage for that, and Yammer can come in, as well as plugins for over, I think it's over 100, 150 other third-party products that can be brought into Teams. So I think the biggest shift that we're seeing is that Teams is really sort of leading on how people want to communicate, and that they don't want to see it as these 10 or 15 different separate technologies, but really bring them all into one place, use Teams as that main technology, and then leverage those other pieces to provide the storage, the sharing, the metadata, and all of that stuff. But to the end user, it's seamless. It's just I go to my Teams site, and there's everything I need. There's my calling, there's my meetings, there's my chat, there's my files, there's Planner, there's my Salesforce app, there is DocuSign, whatever it is that you want to work with. And probably one of our largest customers that's rolled out over 400,000 seats are pretty much just using Teams as the front end to all of that. So I think as I take a look at where we're going and how things are changing, I think there's always going to be that cloud storage and that ubiquitous access. I think it's how people are choosing to work. And I think that Teams is really sort of that big future of that, is to start to remove the seams from moving from app to app and really having this workspace where everything you need is there. It's being managed on the back end, but on the front end, you go into one pane and you just move through tabs within that. And that seems to we're seeing a lot of customers that are doing some really amazing stuff with that. And I really think that if we have an area of focus, if we're going to see a big shift on how people work, that we're going to start to see email reduce, and we're going to start to see Teams and Slack and those types of tools really start to move to the forefront on how businesses do business and how they communicate with their partners and their employees.
Okay, so we've covered a lot of stuff in the time that we've chatted. Is there anything else that you like to share with the listeners about the OneDrive and the experience and what they should be focusing on to really get the most out of this product, which, as you mentioned, most of the time they already have in their environment?
Yeah, we're going to be releasing an IT Pro portal, which will walk IT pros through every step of plan, deploy, manage, and secure, as well as all the end user data. We're going to be launching that in July. So I'm excited to talk about that. You're the first external person that we sort of shared that with. So that's going to be great, and that's really going to help IT pros that are looking to make that move to move over. That's something that we'll be doing through the docs.com because TechNet's going away. It's becoming docs.microsoft.com, so we're going to do that through the docs.microsoft.com platform. There's always our blog, which is really where we're talking about a lot of our big rocks and cool features and things that we're doing on the tech community, techcommunity.microsoft.com, WAC OneDrive. And then I love hearing from folks. So whether they're using user voice or they're reaching out to me directly on Twitter, I got about 130,000, 140,000 followers through Stephen L. Rose on Twitter. But people reach out to me all the time, and I love to take those concepts and ideas and bring them directly to our engineering team. We actually sit once a month, and we go through the top user voice entries. Once a user voice entry gets over 100, we actually sit in a room and discuss it and vote, is this something we're going to do, not going to do, we're going to consider. So that sort of democracy that allows our end users to really tell us what they want is so critical, and we're one of the few products out there doing it. So I really encourage users, if they're happy with OneDrive, awesome, let us know. If you're unhappy or there's things that we can do to make it better, there's so many different ways that you can connect with us directly and let us know. We would love to hear that and continue to work as we move forward on that.
Excellent. Well, I'll make sure that all those links that you've mentioned are in the show notes so people can go to those and provide feedback or get in contact with you directly to basically share their feedback about the product or any questions or queries they may have. But again, I do want to be respectful of your time. I know that you're a busy man, even though it is getting towards the end of your day over on the other side of the world. So I'll take this opportunity to thank you very much for your time and all the information that you've shared and the unique exclusive that I now have for my podcast, which means I'll have to get it out there really quickly. To wrap up, is there anything else? Is there any, give us a bit of a summary, I suppose, you know, we could take as an IT pro to a user and say, look, this is the reason, this is the critical reason why you use OneDrive for Business.
Yeah, just your files are going to be everywhere, and you don't have to worry that if your device dies, I just lost everything. When they're in the cloud, they're available on every device, and they're always there. And that's really at the core. It's being able to sleep at night, knowing whatever you worked on is going to be there the next morning.
And as we know, users have a very high probability of always keeping files and never losing them. So I think that's pretty sound pretty sound advice, really. And again, I think there's a lot of people that it has saved in that respect. So again, thank you very much, Stephen, for your time. Appreciate that. We'll make sure we'll get all the information out. And my advice to people is, again, if you aren't using OneDrive, really start using it. Make the most of it. It really solves a huge amount of problems. With all the functionality that's built into it, it makes life so much easier to store information in the cloud with the compliance and the security rather than keeping it on the desktop or on USB drive. So again, sir, thank you very much for your time. And we'll look forward to all the new updates that will be coming out very shortly for OneDrive.
Absolutely. Thank you, Robert.
Thank you.
You have been listening to the Need to Know podcast from CIA Ops. For training on using technologies like SharePoint Online or Office 365, visit www.ciaopsacademy.com. By purchasing from the selection available, you'll be directly supporting this podcast. To provide feedback on this episode, visit www.ciaops.com/contact.